Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello, welcome back to the Rugby Pod. Wowzers, lads. Hell of a final round of the Six Nations. Hell of a Six Nations, let's be honest. We're also joined this week, Andrew, by our resident Welshman, who might be donning the Welsh jersey again, you never know. Sam Warburton wants him back, but the great Dan Bigger's back with us again. How are you, Dan?
Good, thanks, Jim. Great to be back. Thank you.
Mate, it's amazing to have him. Most Welsh people are hiding at the minute after winning the wooden spoon, but hey, at least they won something. We're going to be chatting all things Six Nations, discussing that dominant win for Italy in Cardiff. Sorry, Biggs, we're going to have to go over it. England's huge effort down in Lyon, and of course, the champions getting the job done against Scotland in Dublin. Scotland doing Scottish things again, eh, Jim?
Well, NFL, wasn't it? By the look of the blocking in that match. Here we go. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure you're subscribed on Spotify. There we go. We know the script.
How are you then, lads?
I'm good, Andrew. I know that I'm better than you and Biggs. And I'm not the middle man. Do you know what I mean? Like, middle of the Six Nations table. I weren't at Cheltenham last week. You know, Dad, go on, mate. I could see you're dying to say something. How are you?
I was just about to say, I mean, as a Welshman and a Welsh people at the minute, we're at rock bottom at the minute. But I'd say you Scots have got a little bit of humble pie to beat after the start of the Six Nations.
We're going to win the fan slam.
Hang on. Do not bring me into this. I am the middleman. I'm not at the top.
You ain't even
I
middle.
I ain't at the bottom.
You ain't even middle. You're fourth.
To me, that's the middle. I'm happy to be fourth and not last. Dan, before we talk about the rugby, I'm going to open up my partner in crime first because I had a couple of conversations. Well, I had a couple of video calls incoming from Cheltenham last week that I refused to answer because I was with the kids and I wanted to be in Cheltenham myself, even though it's not my scene, but it's been a long 2-3 weeks at home with the family, as much as I love them. Andrew Goode, my partner in crime. How the hell are you?
Yeah, I'm tired on Monday, I'm not going to lie. It's been a big week, couple of days down at Cheltenham. There's a lot of Guinness, a lot of Camden Town Brewery been drank, a lot of blackcurrant in it, all the drinks. And yeah, went off the rails a bit, didn't I? Went a bit too hard, but that's it. Last week of the Six Nations, Cheltenham Festival week. I need a holiday, basically. I need a holiday.
What about the weight, Andrew? Like the watt bike? I thought you were on this 6-week watt bike program. There was like selfies of you, like no traps, top off, hairy chest, but looking smooth, looking fit. I haven't seen these pictures coming out recently. Like what's the lay of the land? What's the body weight at? Let's just start with that.
I don't know because I've basically haven't eaten for about 4 or 5 days. Just feeling a bit tender. So I'm hoping the weight's all right. But no, I did 3 watt bikes at the start of last week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, to get me going. And then Wednesday I went to Cheltenham, Thursday I was at Cheltenham, Friday I needed some recovery, Saturday I was on it again at Flatiron Square, and yesterday was a tough day with the family. So I shall try and get back on the watt bike this week, Jim, but I did 3 last week pre-Cheltenham and I'm probably going to struggle next time I get on it.
Goodness me. Big's very different, mate, to you. I'm going to say I'm not even putting myself in there, but this is why you should never retire. Never retire.
I've got to be honest, Jim, that sounds like an absolute dream week for me, in fairness. Cheltenham, bit of rugby, bit of socialising, bit of drinking. Sounds a lot better than getting whacked about for 80 minutes, I'll be honest with you.
Mate, my liver does not agree with that today.
Goody's what you call kicking the arse out of it. So yes, you can go there, enjoy it. You can dabble in a few bets. You can be in bed by 10 o'clock with a smile on your face. The missus is happy. But our Andrew Grew, that's not what happens. That's not it, right? Basically, he's gambled the house away and he's had about 85 pints in 3 days. So he's kicked the arse out of it.
How was your week, Jim?
I need out, I'll be honest. Yeah, been holding the fort for the last couple of weeks. But no, all good, mate. All good. Like, as in 3 games of ruggers on the sofa with the kids and stuff like that. Sounds comfortable. It's not, because you're looking after the children at the same time. They're interrupted. I do feel bad shouting at the kids when the rugby's on. You're asking them to be quiet and I'm trying to get the engaged comments of the great Dan Bigger and co pitch side. Because basically, like, I don't pass judgment myself. When I'm watching the game, I'm waiting for other people to give me the information. I just regurgitate whatever they say. Like, for example, like after the game, after the wooden spoon was won by Wales, like Sam Warburton saying, right, we need Dan Bigger back, we want him back. So I was like, we got him on the podcast, so I'm going to say that Wales need Dan Bigger back. Like, it's as easy as that. That's how I do it. So Dan, are you coming back? Has Warb been on the phone? How much do you want to get back to don that Welsh jersey? You should do it for free.
To be fair, he hasn't contacted me directly, Warby. But I mean, everyone's got a price, Jim, hasn't it? But I would imagine
there's
my
a
price
chance.
Would be relatively high at the minute, sort of thing. So I'm quite happy with my decision. I'm quite happy where I'm at. It's obviously a pretty tough gig in Welsh rugby at the minute.
No shit, you're happy with the decision. Wales haven't won a wooden spoon in 21 years. You didn't want part of that, did you?
There's a few of us actually who've sort of said, we probably timed it quite well, actually. A few of us on like a WhatsApp group and things like that. But on a serious note, though, it's tough to see, because I suppose we're not, as Welsh people over the last sort of 10, 12 years or whatever, we're just not used to being in that sort of position. Where do you see the improvements, and how quick are the improvements going to be? And at the minute, it's not looking great. It's not as if our club game is thriving and this is just like a one-off type of thing. I think it's going to be a few years of a bit of pain and see where we go, really.
On that, be honest, Biggs, and I know we're kind of laughing about it, and if you don't laugh, you cry, right? That's obviously why we're laughing about it, because it isn't great.
I've done that a few times in my career, Jim, don't worry.
I tell you what, not as many times as I have, so I just generally laugh about things now. But when you look at it, Biggs, did you, as an ex-player who's just retired, surely you didn't expect much more? Maybe one more win? Like, what did you expect before the start of the tournament?
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Jim. I did think that the Six Nations would be a struggle. You look at the amount of experience, the amount of players that have left or retired or injured. But I think for me, what I actually thought during the tournament, during each match before the Italy match, I saw something in each performance, which sort of led to a little bit of positivity. And actually, the feeling in Wales was that even though we weren't winning, and we knew that we were going through a little bit of pain, there was actually a pretty positive feeling about the team and where it can go, et cetera, et cetera. But I think a fair bit of that was used up on Saturday after the Italy defeat, which was a pretty low moment, I'd say, because Italy came to Cardiff. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we lost to Italy in Cardiff where they pinched it at the end, and probably Wales were a little bit overconfident and how we played that day. But I thought Italy were great value for their win on Saturday. They looked a well-coached team. They looked a well-drilled team. And if anything, the scoreline flattered Wales. So I think all that goodwill that was used up in those first four games probably diminished pretty quickly after Saturday's result. So that for me, I don't think we expected any more than maybe one or maybe two victories in the tournament. But obviously the way it ended was really, really disappointing.
Yeah, and we should talk about that, really. Italy were phenomenal. If we're going to get into the bones of the game, the way they played, this Italy team, it's a revelation, I think, from... You know, you go back a year or 2 years, everyone was talking about, oh, Italy haven't hardly won any Six Nations games for however long it was. And I don't know the stats off the top of my head. And everyone's calling for, you know, Georgia to be given an opportunity because Italy was so bad. Now you look at this Italian team. Yeah, they probably should have finished above Scotland, which they've done before. I'm pretty sure of that.
Hey, hang on.
You look at the way they're playing. Brex and Menoncello in the centres. Ioane on the wing. Garbisi at 10. The shape they're putting on attack. Yeah, you've got Lewis Leiner now playing on one wing as well.
Two from two.
Oh, mate, yeah, it's not bad, eh? Just retire now, Lewis. But like the tries they're scoring, it's not like an Italian team of old, you know, get a bit lucky or get the bounce of a ball or something like that. Their attack with Cassada as head coach now, and how good they were in defence as well, and how far they've come from the World Cup when, let's not forget, we said it before, they got hosed by France and they got hosed by New Zealand in their group. And that was, you know, 90 points and 60 points or something like that. To perform how they have in the Six Nations with how Benetton are going in the URC, but actually watching the detail of their play, I thought it was outstanding.
I was just going to say, Goody, I actually did a little piece with Paolo Garbisi last week, and it was actually really interesting to chat to him about the influence of Gonzalo Caseda coming in. And he said that what he's brought to the group is a real balance, because Italy of old, the last 3, 4, 5 years, they've just played and played and played and played in any position of the field. And he actually brought in a stat of the amount of points they've conceded from just overplaying, whether it be from turnovers, drop balls, penalties conceded. And he said, if you want to win rugby matches, especially at a top level in Six Nations rugby, you have to have a balance in your game. And I think if you look at the last couple of games against Scotland and Wales in particular, there was a passage of play for about 5 minutes where Italy just engaged in a bit of box kick, box kick, box kick. Whereas before they'd have carried on playing, 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 perhaps conceded a penalty, conceded 3 points, and all of a sudden you're on the back foot again. So I think from my point of view, I think he deserves a huge amount of credit. And speaking to Paolo, I think everybody's loved the energy and the, I suppose, a bit of pragmatism brought in from him as well, rather than just play. So I think from their point of view, they looked a well-coached team, didn't they?
This piggybacks the comments that Sam Warburton made and the opinions that I have on the investment in the game and in Scotland as well. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, when you look at the state of the under-20s and the investment in the game up here. Italy, over the last few years, even under Kieran Crowley, in Benetton, in Zebra, and I know the results haven't gone their way, but in their youth system, everyone's talking about Nacho Brex and Menoncello, like this isn't a fluke. Like what we're seeing with Italy has been building over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Yep.
And it comes down to that uncomfortable conversation of investment. When you're looking at Italy now, you're looking aesthetically, look at how athletic they are. I know Warburton used the word athletes. I love using the word athletes. I saw the picture after of them in the changing rooms. And again, this is very superficial. They got their shirts off. In fucking incredible shape. Incredible shaped athletes, right? That is transferring on the pitch with power, fitness. They're now an 80-minute team, aren't they? Whereas before they weren't. They drop off after 50 minutes. Strength and depth. They're unapologetic about bringing in players like Montuani a few years ago, Lewis Leiner, bringing him in straight away, banging him on the wing because we want to win, right? Oh, yes, there's a progression and we're bringing Italian players through, which they clearly are because you look at their under-20 system. Sport is about investment, and that is what Italy have done. They've stood the test of time. I reckon there was a point, right, where they might have been thrown out of the Six Nations, or the conversation at the top table was actually, we do need to bring Georgia in now because this isn't sustainable. They've now managed to get through that, get past it, have the most successful Six Nations championship they've had. And then this comes onto the question, Biggs, because where do Wales go? Like, how do Wales now get through this period of time that they're going through and catch up to Italy and France and England and Ireland, which almost seems impossible with the amount of money and the investment that's gone into the academies and the clubs?
That's the million-dollar question. You look at the last 10, 12 years in Welsh rugby, and Welsh rugby has probably had these issues underlying for the last 10, 12 years. But because we had, however you want to say it, a crop of generational players and a core group of players stay together for a long period and success, winning championships and Grand Slams, etc., nobody really mentioned any of those points. And you boys know exactly what it's like. As soon as there's a bit of pressure, as soon as results don't go your way, there's questions coming from all angles, isn't it? And everybody sort of creeps out from under the woodwork and all the cracks open up even further. So where do Wales go? They'll be looking to get some players back for the summer tour. So you look at maybe your likes of Gareth Anscombe, Derry Lake, Jack Morgan, possibly Liam Williams even available for the summer tour. So you have to say the quality of those players will clearly make a difference to the team, without a shadow of a doubt. But ultimately, at the minute, we haven't, as a Welsh player nation, we haven't got the quality of player playing that I suppose we did have. Is it going to take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is, to get a group of players to the level of perhaps where we are before? But that's not without saying that France are going to improve. Italy are improving and their 20s are going to produce more and more and more. And at the minute, it doesn't look as if there's a group of under-20s players who are saying, right, this guy's going to come in, this guy's going to be the star of the future, or this guy's going to be the star of the future. So from a Welsh point of view at the minute, there's no doubt it's pretty bleak. And that's not because, you know, I only just retired 5 months ago. But you have to sometimes call it as you see it. The first wooden spoon in 21 years. Regions are struggling. Finances are struggling. So at the minute, is where do you find the positives in it? And I've got no doubt that there's a good team in there somewhere. There's good players in there, good young players, but how long is that going to take? And I know Gats has spoken about they're looking ahead to the next World Cup, but you only have to ask Wayne Pivac that if you don't get results and you don't perform, then you don't make it to a World Cup cycle. So the pressure is 100% on the coaching team and Wales and the players to get results. Otherwise, some of these players and somebody like Wayne who lost his job because of poor results, the pressure's on everybody.
The big question and the big talking point over the weekend was Gats, wasn't it? And what he said post-match about speaking to the CEO in the changing room.
Yeah.
Some people have said he was going to hand in his resignation or he was offering it if they wanted it. You know, in reality, and I said it last week, Gats is probably untouchable at the minute because of his history in Wales, but also because if there is a man to go to war with, it's probably him. Did he know all the issues when he took on the job? Probably not. Did he have a realisation when he started taking the job of the big issues? Well, don't forget last Six Nations, you boys nearly went on strike, didn't you, because of the deal? And that was okay in the end. And then ultimately this year it's the wooden spoon. But it is a regeneration. And, you know, people are talking about should Gats go? Absolutely not. I think he's the right man for the job. Should he change some coaches underneath him? Possibly. I'd be phoning Sean Edwards. Sean Edwards ain't happy in France. Get him back. That should be something that perhaps Gats looks at. But missing Jack Morgan, and you mentioned him there, talk about good young players coming through. Jack Morgan, missing him, I think, has had a huge impact on this Welsh team from a leadership perspective, but also an X-factor player as well. Someone that can actually give them some go forward. And there are good players in Wales, but it's the toughest of time. When you take out the people like yourself, Biggs, and all the others that retired after the World Cup, and you know there wasn't a huge depth of players, it's going to be hard for any coach. So I don't think Wales will achieve anything by thinking that Gats is, you know, the man not to take them forward. I 100% think he is. But there is a realisation of how bad they are. And yeah, this will happen to Scotland in about 3 years' time as well. So don't you worry about it, Jim.
I was just going to ask what your opinion was on the comments in the aftermatch function. What was your guys' opinion and take on it?
I think, and I don't know, my take on it was, I think there's a part of Gats that maybe wanted them to say yes.
Do you reckon? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think he's done it to strengthen his position, right?
Like, I know, that's the outside. And again, I'm looking at it from listening to Sam Warburton, listening to Biggs, taking a wider kind of look of what's coming through, the investment, like looking at Lance Bradley's comments on Ospreys and what they're going to do with the stadium, looking at the results of Scarlets, looking at the results of the Dragons. Like, this is Warren Gatland's biggest job on his hands now. The job that he is in now, it doesn't get any bigger because history is history, right? And people remember Wales being unbelievable, back-to-back British and Irish Lions coach, legend, what he's done. This is the biggest job he's ever had now. And you do wonder whether he offers his resignation, they say yes, and they just have a complete overhaul of what they're doing. But if it's not him, Biggs, like who else is there? Say they took the resignation, they said, yeah, like you can't put Peely in there. You can't put Dwayne Peel in there. You can't bump up Rob Howley. Who is there, Dan? If he did resign, just play devil's advocate.
I suppose that's a really good point, Jim. I think if you're going to make a change, you have to have a viable option to replace him with, don't you? In any form of business or leadership or sport, whatever it is. And I think when obviously Wales made a change with Wayne back in November last year or whatever it was after the November series, they'd obviously lined Gats up and they had a credible and viable option, didn't they? So that's the problem at the minute. And also as well, probably somebody, it's not a particularly appealing job at the minute either, is it? In terms of the finances, the regions, and off the back of a wooden spoon. You could look at it two ways, that you've just got a wooden spoon. You'd like to think there's not a huge amount further down they could go. But one thing I will say on the comments afterwards, I did think that, you know what it's like after a tough loss, a tough campaign. When you're in the changing rooms afterwards, very rarely are things seen clearly. A lot of things are acted on emotion, aren't they?
Yeah.
The adrenaline's pumping. Whether you've won or lost, you see things differently with that emotion. Now, for me, I don't think that conversation should have been brought up. Conversations like that and what goes on in the change room, especially that close after the game, perhaps should have stayed in there. But where I think there should have been a better thing is, right, go away, take the emotion after it, whether it be next week, whether it be 2 weeks' time, whatever it is, go in and have a full Six Nations review with the CEO, with the senior management, with the coaches, with Gats. And then if he still feels like, okay, I've taken this team as far as I can and offer his resignation, or the CEO decides that that's the path to take, then go down it that way. I just felt like, and I know what it's like, and I was never the best at doing this myself, so I'm not claiming to be perfect by any stretch, but I just felt that the way to do it is sit down, review everything properly, thoroughly, and then make a call off the back of that.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it? So he's nipped it in the bud, because obviously winning the wooden spoon is something that no one wants, and you haven't done it for 21 years, but it then just cancels all those conversations around should Gats go, because the CEO said, nah, you're in this, we're in this together. That's the last thing we want to do. So he strengthens his position, and basically it's now like Spider-Man. You go into a room and no one's pointing at Gats. Everyone's pointing at everyone else around the WRU about what we've got to do. And at least there's a clear direction. And I get it. I get both sides of the argument. If I'm Gats, I'm doing the fucking same thing as what he did. And I'm sure, you know, when you want to strengthen your own position or defend yourself, I know why Gats has done it, and it's now clear.
The pressure is well and truly on Gats now, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In terms of he's got to find a way out of this. And like you said, Jim, it's a huge job for him. And I agree, there wouldn't be many better people in terms of reputation, in terms of what he has won, what he has done with this team. But there's no doubt about it. He's got a huge job on his hands to turn it round. And like everybody, if results don't improve and performances don't improve, then he'll be under pressure like everybody else. I think the summer tour is big because I think Australia obviously had a really disappointing World Cup as well.
Yeah.
So that would be...
Hold on. Before Australia, you got to face South Africa at Twickenham. Good luck with that one.
I was skipping that one, Goody, to be honest. I thought let's leave that one be, maybe for the minute. Maybe that's a bridge too far for us. But do you know what, actually, as well? I actually really think the summer tour will be really good for this team because it was a similar thing to what happened to us in 2022, where we lost to Italy in that last game. Then we had to go and play South Africa three times in South Africa. And it was a real... batten down the hatches type series. It was everybody got together. We got away from the Goldfish Bowl and the pressure of Welsh rugby, and it brought everybody together. And we had a clear instructions of how we wanted to play. I do think Wales could surprise a few people on that summer tour. I think the South Africa game will be very difficult, clearly. But I do think that the summer tour is a good opportunity for boys to get closer, get away from the Goldfish Bowl, the pressures that obviously come with playing for Wales. I do believe that there's a good team in there. But they've got to start finding results and pretty quickly.
Talking of tough scenarios, everything we just talked about in Wales is going to come home to roost in Scotland in a few years' time, isn't it? When this generational team that you keep talking about all hang up their boots and retire. How are you, Jim? Because actually, watching Ireland against Scotland, Scotland were impressive in defence, weren't they? Didn't do a lot ball in hand, but actually... a lot of people thought that would be a very comfy win for Ireland off the back of Scotland losing to Italy the week before. How did you watch it, James McHamilton?
I was very proud. I was very impressed with Scotland. And like this guy said to me, he was like, do you think Scotland can beat Ireland at the weekend? And I was like, I don't think they will. I want them to. They could, but they shouldn't. And we've had this conversation before, Biggs, on the pod. Me and Goody have gone back and forth. And he's like, oh, what do you mean, like, we shouldn't? So here we go. I get into the conversation again of not making excuses, but just being completely honest, right? Like, you go man for man in that team, okay? And use it as fantasy rugby, right? So give me a position.
Fly half.
Apart from Finn Russell. Oh. No, because you know where I'm going. give me another a position in the team. So if you go based on, let's go James Lowe, and Duane van der Merwe. I reckon James Lowe gets paid a significantly amount more money than Duane gets paid at Edinburgh. And I'm going to try and find out the figures. I'm going to try and give it a little bit of context and a little bit deep. This isn't about excuses. This is about across the board, like as in Robbie Henshaw, Bundy Aki, Gary Ringrose. Do you think Hugh Jones and Sione Tuipulotu and Stafford McDowell are getting paid anywhere near the level in which them players are? Josh Van der Fleer versus Rory Darge. Caelan Doris versus Jack Dempsey. So you know where I'm going with this. This isn't about me making excuses. This is a kind of two-pronged answer and approach to Scotland needing to invest in players, but also understanding that we should never beat Ireland. We should never beat Ireland with the quality of players that they've got. And I say the quality of players in how they're valued, in what they're paid. So that is a perfect kind of snapshot and idea of a value of how good a player is. Caelan Doris, Biggs, goes to France. He gets paid, I'd say, close to €1 million. Jack Dempsey goes to France, and he's wicked. Jack Dempsey's a brilliant player. He maybe gets £350 to go. That's a massive gap, a massive gulf in quality of player.
So, Jim, your reasoning now is if you paid all the Scotland players more money, they'd beat Ireland. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm not saying that. Sorry. No, I am saying that on paper, Scotland shouldn't beat Ireland. And the way in which they played, I was really proud of the team.
Yeah.
Really impressed with the way that they set up, how defensively they played, the fact that their attack wasn't firing. I don't think Finn had an amazing day in attack, both with ball in hand and... when he was trying to find field position and all these different things. But we found a blueprint that worried Ireland a little bit. But I think, for me, I don't think Ireland looked on either. I think we go back to the World Cup and you saw the celebrations after and you saw, like, Andy Farrell chatting after. I wish Ireland would have come out. Oh, Peter Omani specifically, Biggs, and you can maybe give us a bit of insight into Peter Omani. I wish he came out after and said, look, we're happy to win the Six Nations, but fucking hell, the World Cup's done us. Emotionally, like, we want the World Cup, right? We wanted the World Cup so bad, and this is all right. Mm. But it's broke us. Like, it's broke, because that's what it felt like. Even, like, watching it on TV, the atmosphere, the energy of the stadium just seemed like, oh, we, you know, we're probably going to beat Scotland and we're probably going to win the Six Nations. But is it enough?
To be fair, I think that's a good point, Jim. I do think Ireland handle it a lot better than what France did in terms of, I think they both saw that that World Cup was there to be won. But I think Ireland probably had a little bit more used to winning and had that mentality in them that they just managed to park it. And I'd agree with you, Jim. I didn't think Ireland were at their, apart from that first weekend in Marseille, I didn't actually think Ireland played brilliant rugby. They did enough to win the championship, which is a sign of a great team anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
And they had enough experience. But you know what it's like for you. You played with Saracens for years, and there were so many games where teams like Sarries and Leinster and Ireland or whatever, the great teams, you always think that they're in a bit of trouble and things, but they just pull through because they've got that experience of doing it. And I think that's what Ireland lent on quite a lot, this Six Nations. I think they'll be really happy. But like I said, I think they'd have swapped Saturday's sort of championship for a semi-final or a World Cup or a shot at that, wouldn't they? I think if you'd have offered Andy Farrell a semi-final opportunity or a final opportunity instead of a Six Nations, I think he'd have swapped it, if you want the honest truth. And I think quite a lot of those Irish players would have done that, wouldn't they? Because they're so used to winning Six Nations. It's not a new, exciting feeling. Apart from your likes of, you know, people like your Jack Crowleys and people like him, it's very different. And he's pretty much the only new player in that team, isn't he? In terms of the core of the World Cup, and really, it's only really Johnny that they've lost. So I thought that they just did enough. And I agree with you, Jim. I thought Scotland played really, really well and took the game to Ireland. But I never, ever felt like Ireland were not going to win that match or do enough to win the championship. I don't know what you felt.
Yeah, I did feel that. I did. And we were so good. And it just shows, isn't it, the one try that Scotland give up in the first half is an overthrow at the line-out. That is the difference, Biggs. And you know, having been in their massive, massive games, whether it be for the Lions or Grand Slam deciders, how often do you see that from the very best team in the world, that they overthrow a line-out? Like the call that they made, like the insert with Pierre Schoeman coming in, it's such a fucking hard throw for George Turner as well. You've got Peter O'Mahony on a single man lift. It is probably the right option when you actually break down that line out. To beat Ireland, you've got to beat your very best. You've got to take all your opportunities that come and give them nothing. They gifted them 7 points with an overthrow to Dan Shearer.
Yeah. And I thought what was really impressive about Ireland, and to be fair, even against England the week before, I know they lost the game against England in dramatic circumstances, but the best teams in the world, and what Ireland certainly are one of them, whether it's them or South Africa, they just seem to hang on in there. And, you know, they were absolutely outplayed by England in that first 40 minutes last week, weren't they? But they end up going in ahead 12-10 or whatever it is, or 12-8 or whatever it is. Then all of a sudden against Scotland, they're getting absolutely nothing from their attack. Scotland are absolutely pounding on them and just all over them. But all of a sudden, they just get, and whether you call it luck from an overthrow or, but the best teams seem to have lots of those moments, don't they? And the not so top teams seem to give lots of those moments up. So for me, I just thought that they were incredibly professional and just felt like they were always going to do enough. And I think a special mention, I thought Jack Crowley had a brilliant tournament. And in the last two weekends in particular, where the game certainly hasn't gone all Ireland's way, I thought he stepped up and just been really, really assured for a young guy playing in his first proper Six Nations. I think he deserves a massive shout out. So he's got a huge future ahead of him as well.
100%. And it was, you talk about the errors, Blair Kinghorn's offload that didn't go to hand and obviously went to Ireland. That ends up being a try. Should we just get into it, Jim? Was it a fucking try, yes or no? Because I don't reckon it was.
No, of course I don't.
There we go.
And you know what? As in loads of jeopardy in that game, I don't think the commentary of the game married up to what we were seeing as well. Like 2 minutes to go, Scotland was still in it, like this massive crescendo. And it just felt like you were watching a game from the 1990s. I know I'm being a little bit harsh here, but like I think watching it at home, I'm on the edge of my seat. And I'm with you, Biggs. Do I really believe Scotland can win? But it's gone down to the wire. It's like, fucking hell, here we go. There's a yellow card to Ireland. You know, so much has happened. It's absolute chaos. And it's just like, right, here we go. And the referee comes in and captains, just to let you know that it's going to be sticking with a yellow. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a yellow card or a red card. It's like, he's off anyway. Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted it to be like. But yeah, it was the way that Scotland played, and you talk about the whole tournament, the margin, again, going back over old ground, France.
Yeah.
The ball touched the line, right? So we missed out on that. Took Italy down to the wire in Italy. And then that game at the weekend where two held up tries, Was it a try? Are we playing NFL? Like, these are the margins that, again, me and Biggs were going back on voice note, right? The biggest and the best teams and the most experienced and the most successful teams win their moments. They go their way. They're the moments where they go their way, they walk back, it's like, fucking, I've scored here. Like, undeniable. They're celebrating like they've scored. They're that kind of, the 5% or the 1% of where you put the doubt in the referee's mind, or you're on top of the referee and he's like, fucking hell, this is a great team. Of course they've scored. Them small manipulations of psychology, we just haven't got. Even the one, like, I didn't even pick it up. So the tap and go that they did where Andrew Porter scores, where it's like the NFL is doing the rounds and stuff like that. There's no uproar from Scotland. Like, I didn't even pick it up. When I watched it, I didn't even pick it up because there was no...
Are you talking about the blocking or the fact that did he get it down or not? Because I reckon there was a hand on
both.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean, both. As in, it was just, oh, Ireland have scored. They've come back into it. They've done this innovative, crazy move. Like, there was nothing. Whereas the very best, most successful teams and them small margins, is that challenged? Is there more hysteria around their moments? It didn't feel like... It doesn't feel like we have that.
You think about small margins, and you said it a few times, that try that should have been against France for Scotland, very similar to what you're saying about Porter's try that was just given, not even checked or anything. And I could have sworn there was a hand underneath it. But that is the finest of margins. And Scotland, you know, I take the mickey a little bit. This is a very good Scotland team. I worry about the future for them in 4 years, two, three, 4 years' time when... The likes of Doohan's gone, the likes of Finn might be gone and all that stuff because there's nothing coming through. And that's when you have the conversation about Scotland that we're having about Wales at the minute. But in the here and now, they have been bloody unlucky, let's be honest. And I know Jim's a bit down. You're talking about being proud of the performance. Years gone by, we'd have been like, oh, plucky Scotland, you know, good in defeat again. But it's not that now, is it? It's not the expectation of Scotland fans. And it was, for me... The smallest of margins has cost them a couple of games, which could have been a completely different outcome.
Clearly, they were unlucky in this tournament in terms of a few, you know, the France TMO decision, the one or two decisions on Saturday. But we're obviously disappointed at two World Cups, struggling to sort of get above maybe third position in a Six Nations finishing position. Does something have to change, whether it be coaching staff, whether it be personnel, whether it be... tactics, whether it be the way they play, does something have to change for these unlucky moments to go for them and for them to start backing up result after result after result? And Jim made a really good point that the 20s are obviously struggling. They've got two professional teams. Clearly, other teams have got better setups than them. But what is the line in the sand for something to change for Scotland and for them to achieve with what they've got as brilliant, brilliant players?
Biggs wants Gregor out.
He wants Gregor out.
He wants Gregor out.
Is that what he's saying?
He
I don't know. I mean, again, you go back to the point of Scotland have got so far, and what is the next step? Like, the next step would have been to try and win the Six Nations this year, and they have been bloody unlucky. The France game, obviously, that sucked the life out of them a little bit. Italy, they were poor. Against Ireland, they were actually bloody good, weren't they, in defence? But I don't know. Maybe they just need a complete see you next Tuesday of a captain to start defending themselves and going after, not going after referees, but challenging things, and like a Peter Omani would.
Even Jamie George is going at the, like, he's challenging everything. He's letting him know that he's there. Like, I'm here. Like, we're not here to get fucking done over.
Yeah.
Like, as in, check it. I want you to go back. I'm on top of you. And we are lacking that. I don't care. Like, it's hard for me to say because they're my boys, right? But we are lacking that. Like, we are. And that we're just too nice. But on that question, Goody, I'll just kind of carry on with Biggs, with what you were saying. I don't know what everyone's expectations are. Like, what are we looking at here? Is there an expectation that we should be winning the Six Nations? Because if we do, that is a massive overachievement.
Do you think Scotland are better? That team is better than finishing fourth in the Six Nations?
100%. There's no doubt about it. We have a generational team that can pull out massive performances. Like, we could have beaten Ireland at the weekend, right?
Yeah.
And then it would have been a coulda, shoulda, woulda, like, to have won the Six Nations, like the Fan Slam, the Triple Crown, which we would have won. Obviously didn't happen, but it wouldn't have surprised me. If we would have beaten Ireland, I know that we can pull out big performances. But it's the consistency, and the issue is like, well, what does this cycle of players do now? We've got an easy tour in the summer. We're off to bloody Uruguay and America to go and have a decent crack over there, like literally have a decent crack. And what does it look like for us going forward? How are we leveling success? It feels like it's a little bit of a mess. And I do feel that doing something in this Six Nations, whether or not winning it or finish second, which will be the highest we've ever finished, has a knock-on effect to commercial partners, to academies, to investment, to fans, about falling in love with rugby and really driving us. But we finished fourth. The under-20s, it's been embarrassing with what we've seen. And that's no reflection on the players playing for there. That's a reflection on the investment and the structures that have been put in place to future-proof what Scotland rugby looks like going forward.
What would you do, Jim? Like, are you backing Gregor? Are you saying he needs different coaches underneath him? Are you saying the leadership at the top of Scottish rugby needs to change? Like, investment, what's the thing that could help Scotland out? I know it's a big question, but is there something glaringly obvious to us?
Yeah, to me there is. And I've only seen this now because my lad plays rugby, okay? And this isn't about, oh, JJ needs to be paid loads of money for and get him in a system to play rugby. Like, he plays basketball for Scotland under-14s, and there's loads of opportunity for them to play basketball because it's indoors, okay? Indoor facilities in Scotland. He also was meant to play rugby at the weekend. Cancelled again. Half of his games have been cancelled. So he's 13. He's playing the under-14s or whatever, which we know as young lads is a massive tipping point, isn't it? Both like lads going through puberty, athleticism, whether or not they want to play the sport or whatever. And you know that you need numbers coming through. So there's zero investment at that age. There's none at all. So his game gets cancelled. He's played half his games. And I'm not saying that JJ's going to be a professional rugby player, but there's lads in his team that I am looking at and I'm like, someone needs to get into him and put him into a program, put him into something because he's got something. Now, if they're not playing rugby at the weekends because the pitches are waterlogged, they're not going indoors to work on their skills, then what's coming through? Like, this is the next generation of players. In 5 years' time, they're going to be expected to potentially play professionally, you know, we're in 7 years' time to play in the Six Nations, like Menoncello, Daffy Jenkins. And if they're not working on their skills and there's no program or system for them to go through, look at Ireland. They athletically profile players at 13, 14. It's what they do in America. It's what they do in football. It's what they do in basketball. It's what they do in all these big sports. And that takes investment, doesn't it? And people don't like talking about it. And Warby mentioned it. And that's where I've gone back and forth with Sam Warburton. You have to invest at the highest level. And that is like in the men's game at the minute, because if you get the men's game right, then that filters down into the women's game. It filters down into grassroots because you inspire a nation commercially. Everything comes to the fore if you're successful. But you have to invest in academies. That is what Ireland have done. That is what Italy have done. And with that is money. You've got to invest money into the next generation of talent. And I go back to JJ, and that's just a snapshot. Half the games are cancelled. No indoor training facilities for them to go to. And there's no incentive. Like, where's the incentive if you're playing a contact sport to get into a system where, you know what, if you get into this system, we'll pay for you to go through school, we'll pay for you to go through university, we'll put you in a scholarship program. That is what sport at the highest level, this is what they do in England as well, Gouda. You know that. You went through a system like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we don't have that in Scotland.
So basically you're saying at some point in the next 4 years, England are going to win the Calcutta Cup again.
I don't know about that.
In four years, maybe.
4 years.
Yeah. I wouldn't be putting my money on that just yet, Goody.
Do you want to experience the Six Nations live next year? Book your tickets, accommodation and travel with Gulliver Sports Travel now.
Gulliver's have been taking fans to the Six Nations Rugby World Cups and Lions Tours for over 50 years, Andrew. And they're experts when it comes to sorting unforgettable rugby weekends away.
Book now at gulliverstravel.co.uk or call 01684 878 350 and mention the Rugby Pod to win free tickets to a clubhouse event with some rugby legends. Well, Jim, enough of Scotland. You finished fourth, which is good for you lot, normally. Ireland have won it back-to-back. They didn't get the Grand Slam, but they're in a good place. They've transitioned from Sexton to Crowley. They've carried on their form. Geez, they've lost, three games in about 4 years now. They weren't 100% in every game in tip-top shape, but they were still, in my opinion, comfortably the best team in the competition. The big thing isn't they're talking about, everyone said, oh, Ireland, best team in the world. There's some changes coming. So Mike Catt's leaving, who's ran the attack. And then the big one, this summer, they go to South Africa, don't they? And that will probably end the conversation one way or the other of who is currently the best team in the world. I'm saying it's South Africa at the minute, but as much as they weren't in tip-top form, they did it in third or fourth gear at times, and it looked comfy, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I can't wait for that tour in South Africa as well. The South Africans already talked about. This is the thing that goes topical, because whenever you speak to anyone when we're in the Six Nations, it's like, oh, Ireland, the best team in the world. And then you hear the comments and the interactions. What are you talking about? South Africa are the best team. But them going down to South Africa is going to put that conversation to bed. So it's going to be wicked. Dan, who is the best team? Who's the best team in the world at the minute? You say it.
I still think South Africa haven't played since the World Cup final. No. So I think they still
they're the best team.
It has to be South Africa. But quickly finishing up on Ireland, what I was really impressed about with Ireland was that I wouldn't say that they had anybody, any individual who had an absolutely exceptional tournament. I thought that they were all sort of 7 out of 10 pretty much every week. Yeah. And for winning big international matches, you probably need 10, 12 players just to be at that 7 out of 10 every week. And that's what they were. Like you said, they probably won some games in third. And put, you know, you look at the Italy and Welsh games, and they probably were in third or fourth gear, weren't they? They had a couple more to go. And for me, that was almost more impressive, that they were just so solid, gave the opposition absolutely nothing. Very, very worthy winners.
They're in a great spot. And it's, I suppose it's like anything. It's like, how long can you maintain that for when you are the best team in that competition? And that's their challenge. It'll be interesting. I'm not sure why Mike Catt's leaving, but if I'm Steve Borthwick, I'm giving Catty a ring and getting him involved with the England coaching, because yes, we've made a step up, but Catty's knowledge of how they've got to be this great team to look at and to watch in attack, I think is definitely worth a few conversations. And be interesting to see how things change if Mike Catt leaves, because he's been part of the furniture and part of Andy Farrell's coaching team for this period where they've been so successful. So watch this space.
Talking of England stepping up in attack, I thought they were bloody brilliant. I thought the game was awesome down in Lyon. Andrew, before we get Dan Bigger, he was on the side of the pitch. Were you happy this week with the way in which England played? I thought they looked very good again. Quarter English, remember?
Yeah, second half. And listen, hugely positive end to our Six Nations. The frustration is still that Scotland game and how shit we played against Scotland. But at 16-3 down just before half-time, I'm thinking, geez, this could be messy. If France just get another score, and the noise in that stadium, and Biggs, you were there, we'll chat about that in a minute. But I was really impressed. Second half, the way England played. George Ford, I've bagged him at times. He went missing against Scotland. He was brilliant, I thought, against France at the weekend. Marcus Smith at fullback, I thought, was brilliant when he came on. You just need to listen to Jamie George in his interview afterwards. He said, when we challenge teams with ball in hand and play with wit, we're a bloody good team. And the frustrating thing for me is, I'm really impressed with the trajectory that this team have gone on in the last 2 weeks and how they've changed, how they've played. But the frustrating thing is how it started. But like everything in life, it's not how you start, it's how you end. And we ended with a loss, but it was a very encouraging performance. And, you know, Biggs, what was it like? Stadium seemed absolutely epic. The atmosphere was great, was it?
The stadium was absolutely rocking beforehand. I've played and been in some amazing stadiums in my time, but that was right up there on Saturday night. Incredible atmosphere, incredible stadium to play at, and just an incredible match to go with it as well. What I was really impressed with over the last couple of weeks, I suppose the question, you know, we spoke a few weeks ago, Goody, didn't we? We said, what's England's blueprint and how do we want England to play? Well, if you're an English fan, you want England to play like they have the last couple of weeks every time they play, don't you? In terms of they challenged the gain line, they had abrasive ball carriers, they moved the ball well, they got their best players into the game. Sounds easy, but isn't always as easy to do. You want your likes of your Tommy Freeman's on the ball, you want Ben Earl on the ball. Lawrence looked strong in attack and defence. So for me, I thought, especially being pitch side as well, you could see just how in sync they were. And I was working for ITV for the England-Wales game, and I compare that to being pitch side to the England-France game last weekend, and they just looked a different team. They looked like they knew what the next phase was coming. They looked like they knew what the call was next time. They were winning collisions. They looked more comfortable. And I had a conversation with the England analysis, a guy called a Welsh lad, Joe Lewis. I said, it was a brilliant way for you boys to end the tournament, and it looks as if you found a way to play. And he said the first 2 or 3 weeks was almost sort of just finding out what we were good at and what we weren't good at, and actually sort of spending a bit of time on the attack as well, because obviously the longer you're together, the more fluid things, and you know, get to know people's games. And I just thought that was quite telling, that almost the first couple of weeks they sort of went back to a bit of old school England just to get results. And then they've obviously developed their game, and we're not forgetting that there was a real poor performance up in Murrayfield. But I would be really encouraged from an England point of view after the last couple of weeks. I thought they looked like a proper team on Saturday.
I think actually, Jim, when you talk about England, losing that game to Scotland in the manner we did was actually a blessing in disguise, because it's shaken us into, we've got to change how we play completely. And that's what I take from Jamie George, listening to him. You know, we spoke the other week about some of the ex-players, Ben Youngs and Johnny May, talking about attack's an afterthought. Well, it can't be now. It has to be the first thing you think about, because you've got to score more points than the opposition to win a game. I know that's obvious, but you can only do that realistically, consistently, if you have a decent attacking plan. And we've seen it the last 2 weeks. You know, some of the performances, Ben Earl, best number eight in the world at the minute, which isn't fair on South Africans because they haven't played. I know that argument's going to come back up again, but he was a worldie. And you go back a year, Steve wouldn't pick him in the Six Nations last year, yet he's been playing this way for a long time, hasn't he, Jim? So that there is, you know, George Martin's come in and done a great job being physical, carrying, but it all comes to me around understanding and having a plan and attack and players knowing where they're meant to be, what the options are. And there's always two, three, four options for a ball player, which you go to the first couple of games of the Six Nations, especially the Scotland game, it was one-out rugby at times, which was easy to defend. So we're more clinical. We played at pace, played with physicality, with tempo, and no way was that a fucking penalty against Ben Earl at the end. Ridiculous decision.
Well, Andrew, we will come on to that. I just want to give a few anecdotes from the games and just like looking at England with me, England under 19 shirt on. I thought, because France were, I thought were on. Okay, yeah. You look at the way in which they played, like Damien Penno, my goodness me, I think he's just like one of the greatest players ever at the minute. But the fact that England managed to live with France in Lyon with all that energy in the stadium and play the way in which they did is enough to show me that they're okay. And that's an England team without Owen Farrell, right? And without Manu Tuilagi. I know, yes, he came on, where you're thinking, can England be a decent team without an Owen Farrell, without a Manu Tuilagi, with these players that are retiring or leaving? You know, like, as in, is George Ford the answer at 10, or is it Marcus Smith? I don't think Marcus Smith's at 15. I think he got found out a little bit positionally at the weekend. But if I'm an England fan, you've got Feo Aboso to come back in as well, and you've got the option of George Furbank at 15 or Freddie Stewart. You mentioned George Martin, who I think is a standout performer. The fact that you've got someone like Dan Cole, how they've managed to get players like that performing, and the bench coming on, Will Stewart as well, like people who have not made a massive impact in an England jersey, it just shows you how quickly it can shift. And clearly they've got a good coaching setup.
And we've got a hard 2024 the rest of the year now. We play Japan, then we go two tests in New Zealand, then the autumn, we've got the ultimate. So we've got the three big ones from the Southern Hemisphere in New Zealand, South Africa and Australia, and then Japan again. So basically we're bookending a load of tough games with two games against Japan. And I've been vociferous on here about it, how England have played. And yes, we got to third in the World Cup, but it was dull to watch. And the connection wasn't there with the fans. And we didn't lose at the weekend anyway. We didn't lose. We just ran out of time. That's all that happened.
No, just run out of time. That was the statement.
Have you ever heard anything like that? What is that about? We didn't lose. We just ran out of time. No, Steve.
I wish I could have used that a few times in my career. That's for sure.
I couldn't use that. There was longer time when we played New Zealand. It could have been about 150-0. So I was glad the final whistle went. Right, lads. Let's have a look at what we think is our Six Nations team of the tournament. Shall I go with the forwards? Do you want to do the back? Should we go all in?
Let's go all in.
What idea do you want it to work?
Yeah, let's go all in, Jim. I mean, you're obviously going to be the brains of the forward pack, but we're going to give our pointers. Six Nations team of the tournament. Let's see what we got, lads. Let's start in the front row.
Okay, so you can challenge me on this. I'm more than happy.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start with Lou said. I've nailed this position down, having seen Scotland get run over in the scrums at the weekend. So Andrew Porter, him running over the Scotland scrum and literally running into the bench, and the way in which he's played, because he struggled at scrum time. Well, as in from a perception of referees, that All Blacks game, the fact that me and Bernard Chapman, who came on here, was talking about the Achilles heel of Ireland being the scrum. Well, that's been put to bed now. So Andrew Porter, cornerstone of that. Are we happy with that, lads?
Very happy.
Shout out for Fischetti as well.
Fischetti, very good. Good in the loose as well. Can hit a man. Good over ball as well. Italian scrum has been very good as well. But Andrew Porter, friend of the show.
Tight head prop, Jim?
You ain't going to believe it. I did mention it. Who would you go for, Andrew?
I would probably go Weenie Antonio. Biggs?
I've got Tyke Furlong in my team. I still think that he's the best tight head prop in the tournament for me.
I just didn't like his dive. I hear you, but I didn't like his dive, and he tried it again at the weekend, didn't he?
But I love Ty Furlong. Yeah. I really do. But I've had to mix it up a little bit because I'm trying to manipulate the Lions staff. I'm trying to manipulate Andy Farrell. Like, if we start talking about players on here, not that this player who I'm picking is going to go, but Dan Cole.
Really?
Yeah, I'm surprised because I think his age profile, didn't know whether or not he'd be in. He was obviously been on the bench with Leicester with Joe Hayes coming in. But the way in which he's performed, I don't know whether it's him doing his own podcast or whatever, but I just think...
It's an olive branch, isn't it?
It's an olive branch.
Well, I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to agree with Biggs, actually. Now we're discussing it. Champion team, Tadhg Furlong, ridiculous.
I'm happy with that. 1-3 for the Irishman. In the middle of that, I've got an Englishman. I've put Jamie George, captain, the way that he's led England, the emotional turmoil that he's been through personally, the way in which he's spoken after the game. And look, I'm close to Jamie, so I'm putting him in there. But Dan Sheehan, my goodness me, he's a freak of nature. But you can't put an All-Ireland team in, even though they won the tournament. Oh. You know? And England beat Ireland. So yeah, that's why I'm putting Jamie George in there.
Dan Sheehan has topped the try-scoring charts for a forward. And it's the most tries a forward has ever scored in the Six Nations with 5. So I'm going to have to challenge you and go Dan Sheehan.
You going All Ireland?
You have to, mate. Are we going with Sheehan or are you going with Jamie George?
I will go with Dan Sheehan.
There we go.
I'm easily sold. It's been Paddy's weekend as well. All Ireland. We'll jump into the second row and we'll double them up at the same time. So I have gone Joe McCarthy, especially the first two games, but the way that he's come in this tournament, such a young age, blasted onto the scene, to hold that position down in an Irish jersey when you've got the likes of James Ryan as well that you're competing against and Ryan Baird on the bench, just shows how good he is. I know Andy Farrell came out and said, look, you know, we're trying to keep him grounded, but just that game against France alone, I thought he was fantastic to hold that position down. And then I've gone George Martin with him as well. I think he's made a massive difference to England. That game in the World Cup against South Africa kind of cemented him as a starter. Me and Goody have been talking about him on social media and on the podcast for the last couple of years, saying that he's been the missing link for England, that kind of physicality, out and out kind of old school brutality. So I've gone Joe McCarthy and George Martin as well, but there's been a lot of good second rows that have played.
Yeah, shout out to Tadhg Byrne as well. I thought first game against France, he was outstanding. He's obviously played really well. But I'm with you, Jim. It's your area of expertise. I will go along with your selections there, Jim. What about you, Biggs?
Yeah, I'm happy to concede. I actually went Tadhg Byrne in my team of the tournament. I think what he gives you as a full package. But I wouldn't have too many complaints with George Martin. And like you said, Jim's the guru in that area. So we'll give Jim George Martin.
And we're not going All Ireland. I ain't doing that. Just staying at home as much as I love the Irish. Yeah. And that we're loved over there. Right, let's have a look at the back row. Should we just go 6, 7, 8 or should we just go 3 back rows?
And let's start with the easy one. Number 8, Ben Earl. Don't know how many man of the matches he's had. He's had a few ball carrying stats off the chart, tackle breaks. He has been an absolute phenomenon for England at number 8.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and actually I've gone for 3 7s. I know Ben Earl plays 8, but I've gone for 3 7s in the back row. So you can challenge me on these, but friend of the show, Michele Lamoureux,
yeah,
sets a new record for tackles made in the Six Nations, 103 tackles made.
Jeez.
So we knew he was good, but he's now on the road to greatness. So I've put him in there, and I've also put, you might be able to clear up his name, Biggs, Tommy Raffel as I know him, but apparently it's Tommy Raffel, which doesn't have the same kind of twing to it. Is it Tommy Raffel?
Tommy Raffel.
Raffel, not Raffel. There you go. Raffel.
That's what I've been calling him for 2 years and he hasn't corrected me yet. So we'll go with that. I've gone exactly the same as you, Jim. I think Michele Lamoureux's been an inspiration, captain in Italy. The amount of work he gets through, I think he's been brilliant. Easy choice at 8, as you said, Goody, and Tommy Raffel at 6. Like you said, 3 7s. And I hate to think what the campaign could have been like for Wales if it wasn't for him in the back row. I think he's been absolutely magnificent. I think it's joint top for turnovers in the Six Nations, John Barkley, in a team which is obviously under a huge amount of pressure. And I think he's been absolutely magnificent. Certainly one of the Welsh players that can hold his hands up and say that he delivered a pretty special tournament from a personal point of view. So he gets my shout at 6.
There we go. We all agree, lads.
We do.
We're going to the backs then. Let's go to the halfbacks. We'll start off at 9. Biggs, I'm going to come to you first. Then I'm going to be influenced by Jim. And then I'll give my thoughts. Who's your best 9 this tournament, Biggs?
Best 9, Gibson Park. I think he's an exceptional rugby player. Helps when you've got a front five doing the things that Ireland's front five does for you. But I think he's just a brilliant rugby player, clever rugby brain. For me, a little bit ahead of everything else. I thought Thomas Williams, again, deserves a bit of a shout out. I thought he had a good tournament, again, in a really tough team. But Gibson Park makes my team.
Same for me. Just watching him off the ball, like as in the trust that he's got in his defence to go after Finn in the line. You saw him just making beelines, that stuff, box kicking. Wicked player and liked and loved by the lads. He needs to sort that lid out.
I can't watch that's the exactly game. What I was going to say.
Do you or not, or is it just me? Biggs, do you have that or not? Me and Goody are very strange, right? We're watching the game and I'm focused on his lid saying, mate, just shave it off now. It's the best thing you can do. Do you think that Biggs does that welcome to your psyche?
He just needs to come to me and talk to me about a hair transplant. I can sort him out.
That's his next port of call. Six Nations team of the tournament, but go to Goody for a guy.
There you go. All agreed. Yeah, Jameson Gibson Park. Let's move on to fly half then. I think this will be an interesting debate because I've got a feeling I know where Biggs is going and I don't think I'm going to agree, but Biggs, fly off, who are you going with?
I think you know I've actually gone with Ford.
He knew that was coming.
I knew that he knew it was coming, but I think Crowley deserves a huge mention. I think he's been obviously in the Six Nations the winning team, but he hasn't influenced the game as much as Ford has. And for me, I thought Ford in the first couple of weekends got England over the line in terms of with his kicking, with his game management. And I think the last couple of weekends, he's got that team moving. And I think he deserves his place there. That's where I've gone. I think he's under a bit of pressure as well, which is never easy from people like Goody. But yeah, no, I've gone for Ford at 10.
Matt, I've gone for Ford as well. Just because I wanted to go for Finn, but I don't think we've done well enough as a team to put him in there. I was going to go for Paolo Garbisi as well, but a few big kicks, the miss at goal in France for him to win that game for them in Lille was massive. He was very close, but I just think how England have come back in, Andrew. So all the pressure's on you. I don't know how we're doing this, if it's 2-1 or whether, Andrew, you have complete sign-off, mate. I don't know, but who is it?
I've gone Jack Crowley, stepping into Johnny Sexton's shoes. Yes, and listening to you boys, you have convinced me around George Ford. Against Wales, he's 50-22. Kind of turned the tide a bit, and a bit of game management got us through that game. I just can't forgive the Scotland game when we were that bad and he went missing. But last week against Ireland, I thought ball in hand, he was outstanding, George Ford. His kicking let him down, but his performance against France was brilliant. But Jack Crowley, for me, stepping into Sexton's shoes, they win the Six Nations. He's gone about his business quietly, but really calmly, and he has some massive shoes to fill. So my pick was Jack Crowley, but Biggs is a way better 10 than I was, way more experienced. So I've just got a bigger mouth. So
it's 2-1.
Yeah, it hurts me, but I'll let you go, George Ford, but not sure. Shout out to Garbisi.
Yeah, shout out to Garbisi. Yeah,
massive.
Very close, but I'll let you have it, boys.
Signed for Toulon as well, isn't he, Garbisi?
He has. So hopefully that'll help my back out a little bit, Jim, as well. So
he plays 12, don't worry.
Yeah, no complaints here, Goody.
Talking of 12s and centres then, Jim. Biggs, who have you picked in the centres?
These are the two easiest picks. I thought Bundiaki's been brilliant, and as he always is. But Menoncello and Brex have been, if they're not on the shortlist for player of the tournament, then I think something's gone badly wrong. The partnership that they've formed in terms of the work they do, which complements each other. Menoncello, I think he's only 21, maybe 22 this year.
Mental. 21. Mental.
Brex, in terms of his work rate defensively and how he sort of holds people as a ball player. I wouldn't say there's a better centre partnership certainly in the Six Nations.
Biggs, I went exactly the same as you, mate. The Italian stallions at 12 and 13 both followed me at the weekend on social media. Well, I actually followed them first. Ollie Lawrence, big shout out to him as well. I thought he's been brilliant. So I think Ollie Lawrence has taken over the mantle of Manu Tuilagi, what he brought. I think every time he's played, he's looked wicked. The two Scotland centres, when Sione Tupulotu was fit, him and Hugh Jones. Yeah. Hugh Jones, wicked try again at the weekend, but Sione got injured. And you can't look past the kind of cornerstone of the Italian 12-13. Like, years gone by, really good competitive pack. They've lacked in the back line and that kind of killer instinct. Spoken about it before, Biggs, playing at the line, but their physicality. For such young men, they look like gladiators as well. So they're in aesthetically for that.
Completely agree. Two absolute units, playing well. Good combo. I'm happy with that pick, boys. Right, let's move on to the back three then, shall we?
Go on, you go. Let's see what you got.
Well, back three could get tasty. I'm going to go wingers. I think you have to go Penno on one wing. He's been brilliant. And then I'm stuck between two. stuck between two wingers, Duan van der Merwe, because of how he performed against England. But then against Italy, he might have cost them the game with his 2-on-1. And then James Lowe, I thought, who's gone about his business well as well. So I'm going to go James Lowe. I ain't going to go Duan. Even though he was worldy against England, but then Italy wasn't great. Yeah, so I'm going to go James Lowe. James Lowe and Penno.
So the minute we haven't got one Scot in there, or South African.
You finished fourth.
Like, just to let you know.
You finished fourth.
We got a Welsh lad in there.
True, they got the wooden spoon, but he's Leicester.
Yeah, very true. I've actually gone for three wingers in the back three because I've actually felt like there's been no real standout fullback. And I was exactly the same as you, Goody. I was torn between James Lowe and Duhan. So I've just stuck them both in. I've gone James Lowe. I put James Lowe at fullback with his left foot. And I've chucked Duhan on the right and Penno on the left.
I'm happy with that. I'm happy. As long as someone's in there.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, as long as the Scots in there. You can't go from Scotland finishing fourth. We've got Italy. We've got three Italians in there. And Wales, where we've got Tommy Raffle, Rafael, and not have a Scot in there. So Duhan's got to be in there, Andrew. You horror. You're horrible. You're burnt, that's why, because he's smashed England single-handedly.
Yeah, true. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I was going to say, I thought Hugo Keenan's gone pretty well at fullback quietly as well without setting the world alight. Thomas Ramos as well. I know he's moved to 10. His goal kicking's been impressive, but I'm with you. Let's do it. Fuck it. Let's get Duhan in there and let's play James Lowe at fullback and then we'll have Penno on the other wing. Who's your skipper, lads? What, are we going to name a skipper as well?
Maximus. I'm Italian. I like the fact that Michele Lamoureux, friend of the show, lived right next to the stadium. He basically lived in the Colosseum. The way they sing the anthem, I'm all in, mate. You can sell me up a river.
Yeah.
As in, if he tells me, like, I want you to run through this wall, I want you to die for me, I'll be like, Lamoureux, mate, you're about 14 years old, but I will fucking die for you, mate.
He's our skipper, then. I agree. He's our skips.
No problems with that.
Right, Andrew, let's have a look at the good, the bad, and the ugly.
In association with?
Moreland Brawl.
There you go.
We're low on stock, though.
Are you?
Yeah, we're low on stock, especially shower gels. So just to make people aware.
Is that problems with the supplier or you've had loads of orders?
No, like loads of orders off the back of this. But Biggs, I hope you like beard oil, mate, because you're going to be bathing in it because I'm sending over about 108 bottles of it.
Cheers, Jim.
Let's start off with the good then. We're going to start off with Gloucester, who won the Premiership Cup on Friday night, beating Leicester Tigers 23-13. Scenes down at King's Home were pretty special. My favourite bit was Lewis Ludlow picking up the trophy with his boots, his MND boots around his neck. So massive shout out to the Gloucester boys. What else was good? England under-20s won the title with an amazing victory down in France. A bonus point win, 45 points to 31. They were 21-5 down at one point. So a massive shout out to the England under-20s. Georgia, get a shout out in the good. Richard Cockvilly's men. Cockvilly! They won the seventh consecutive Rugby Europe Championship. They're now 35 games unbeaten in that competition. They've got to have a playoff with the bottom team, Wales, surely, to get into next year's
season. Oh, definitely now. 100%. It's got to happen.
So massive shout out to Richard Cockvilly and all the Georgia boys beating Portugal 36 points to 10. What else was good? England versus France, the game itself. I thought it was an awesome match to watch to end the tournament. Le Garrick's try was an absolute worldie in the first half as well. George Ford's little tip on, which led to Freeman's try. Some absolutely brilliant bits of rugby and a brilliant way to end the Six Nations. What else was good? Italy. Get a shout out in the good. Of course they do. It was a class display at the Principality. The scoreline flattered Wales, as we've spoken about. Some amazing tries. Pani's try was, I thought, out of this world too, with the break coming from Ioane. So big shout out to the Italians. We'll stick someone Welsh in there for you, Biggs. George North gets a shout out in the good this week. 121 caps, 47 tries for Wales. An absolute legend of the game. Very sadly got helped off the field towards the end with an injury, so we hope he's okay, but what a career. British and Irish Lion as well, George North. Sad way to go out, losing to Italy, but what an absolute legend he's been for Welsh rugby. So that's why he gets a shout out in the good. But the good this week goes to Ireland and Dan Sheehan. Dan Sheehan scored the most tries by a forward in Six Nations history with 5, and Ireland get the good. No Grand Slam win, but back-to-back tournament wins is pretty tough to do. Best team by far in the competition. Yes, they might have only been in third or fourth gear at times, but they've won the Six Nations. They've gone back-to-back in that sense. And that's why Ireland win the good this week. The bad, few bits of bad. We're going to start off where we were last week. The Crusaders played 4, lost 4. Absolutely shocking. Scotty Robertson leaves them. Andy Rowe leaves the pod. Crusaders are a bag of shite.
So it's Andy Rowe's fault.
Yeah, blame Andy Rowe. The Crusaders, their worst ever start to a Super Rugby campaign, played four, lost four. The Force get a mention in that as well. They've played four, lost four as well. So not good from them. What else was bad? Scotland under-20s, Jim. They got the wooden spoon for the fifth time in 7 years. You are fucked in a few years, aren't you?
Well, it seems that way, yeah. Unless this podcast is the intervention they needed.
There we go. But the bad this week, we're going to stick with a theme all the way through the good, the bad and the ugly. The bad this week goes to Wales, Dan Bigger. I'm sorry to say it. You probably knew it was coming. It's their first wooden spoon for 21 years.
I expected it, Goody.
Played five, lost five. Underwhelming performance to end the competition. They got progressively worse, actually, I think, to be fair. Welsh rugby is in a bad place. And to win the first wooden spoon for 21... Hey, at least you won something, lads. 21 years, you've won the wooden spoon. So that's why Wales get the bad. And then the ugly. Only one bit of ugly that I could find over the weekend. And again, it's Welsh. Neil Jenkins. Not because he's ugly. I'm not saying Jenks is ugly. I mean... He hasn't aged well, but telling my friend, Matthew Raynal, his job is to referee the game when he got told that his job was to bring the water on. I didn't have any time for Jenks doing that. He's a legend of the game, Jenks, isn't he? But I think he overstepped the mark there. It's not a good look. And that is why.
That's what they do on LinkedIn, Andrew. Basically, they're both giving their LinkedIn profiles. That's true. What they should be doing.
True.
You know?
You bring the water.
A lot of peacocking.
There we go. But anyway, Neil Jenkins, that's why you win the ugly this week.
Right, Dan. It's not been a great week for Welsh rugby, but it's been a great week for the Rugby Pod and the listeners because we've had you on the show again. So thank you very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thanks, boys, again for having me. Always an absolute pleasure. I hope to see you soon, in person maybe next time, in the studio in London.
100%, your value has gone through the roof, not only being on the Rugby Pod, but having retired from Welsh rugby and seeing them win the wooden spoon. So, Biggs, absolute pleasure having you on as usual. Most Welsh are hiding in their houses, not coming out. Biggs has fronted up and he said, because he's retired, they've won the wooden spoon. So, mate, great to have you on. Best of luck for the next few weeks and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, lads. Cheers. Thank you.
Right, Andrew, let's go big into shout-outs. We've got a load of them this week.
We do.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. We're going to start off with a sad one, actually, and it's for Darlington Rugby Club. They've just recently lost their club president, Tommy Miller, who collapsed on the pitch whilst helping tidy up before a game. Despite all the best efforts of players and the club physio, they were unable to bring him back and he passed on the field where he spectated, coached and refereed. He leaves behind his wife, Lynn, his son, Dan and two grandsons who were all there to spectate at the game. It's with deepest sadness that they had to say goodbye to a much loved and influential character. So rest in peace, Tommy. Our thoughts are with everyone at Darlington Rugby Club and your family.
Yeah, I did see that one. Incredibly sad. And there's another sad one as well. And I suppose we're doing these shout outs as well, just to let people know that we are thinking about you and these messages don't go unnoticed. So I've got a big shout out to Nigel Farley, a physiotherapist based in Bristol. He recently lost his dad, who was a great supporter of Irish rugby, to the fight with MND. In his memory, which is inspired by the work of Sir Kevin Sinfield for Rob Burrow and Doddy Ed, he wants to continue to raise awareness for the still incurable illness. He watched his dad endure the greatest physical challenge of his life with courage and dignity and wants to emulate some of the feelings by competing in the biggest physical challenge of his life. He's planning to run a 102-mile ultra marathon along the Cotswold Way, starting in Chipping Campden, running to Bath on Friday the 13th of September. He wants to thank his mum and family who gave their selfless, unwavering support, which immensely lengthened his dad's life and made him comfortable. So a good luck to everyone involved in the challenge.
Yeah, good luck with that challenge. Massive shout out as well, Jim, to our old club, Barker Butts Under 16 Girls.
Yeah, I saw that.
The girls have made the semi-finals of the National Cup after beating Market Bosworth 45-12. So well done to all the Barker Butts Under 16s and go well in the semi-final.
A massive shout out to Zurich Rugby Academy in Switzerland. They are the junior sections of the GC Rugby Zurich and they're celebrating their 20th anniversary this year. So massive well done to Kate, who's a big listener of the pod, and all the volunteer coaches and players at Zurich Rugby Academy. Bonjour. They speak French in Switzerland, don't they? That's
they
it.
Do. They
That's
do,
That's their native
James.
Tongue.
Yes,
there
it is.
We go. Look
yeah.
at me.
And you
Look
just said...
at me. Hello.
And finally, I just want to give a massive shout out to Dafydd Powys Police Dog Section. to their colleague, PC Steph John, who has just worked his last shift after 30 years of service. He's a big fan of the pod and a devoted Wales supporter. Commiserations with you, Wooden Spoon. So we could do with cheering up a little bit. His big rugby flex is talking about sharing a cigarette or two with me post-match in brief. No, mate, I don't smoke. Never have. What's he on about?
Well, when it says a roll-up or a rollie, that convinces me that it is true. No one throws that away. No use to like a roll-up back in the day.
That must be 3 o'clock in the morning outside Lasharette nightclub in brief. That's all I can remember.
Hello!
So anyway, a happy retirement from everyone at the Rugby Pod and from the Dafydd Powys Police Dog Section.
Right. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, James.
Thanks to producer Rob.
Of course.
The great Dan Bigger as well.
And thanks everyone else for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube as well and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
That a boy. Rugby Spot.
Spotify pod.